This is the Recency Bias. Welcome to your not-so-morning after, but a day later mini-pod. I'm Zach Vanoss, along with you. A few reasons that the mini-pod didn't happen immediately following, or the next morning after following the Saturday night loss. One being that I'm not going to get up early on a Sunday to do one of these. That's just not going to happen. Though I was up early to watch F1, so could have done it. I guess I didn't want to live in it in that moment. But then Sean and I were going to try and get together to do a two-man gig. It didn't happen. So this one going up shortly before the start of Game 3 on Monday, Victoria Day in Canada. May 2-4 weekend. May long weekend, whatever it is you want to call it. I call it Bob Dylan's birthday. That's what I call it. So this is more like a pre-game show, probably, than a recap. They'll do a little bit of both. Tough loss for the Leafs Tough loss for the Habs. Oof, I wish it was a tough loss for the Leafs on Saturday night. Tough one for the Habs, who, you know, if you haven't watched the Canadiens at all in the regular season and you're just diving in for the postseason, you want to know what the Habs look like in the regular season. Game 2 was a pretty good example of that in a lot of ways. The Canadiens got themselves in some penalty trouble. Yes, I hear you on the other end as you listen to this. Some of those penalties were a little questionable. I don't think the ones that really hurt them in the end were really questionable. I think the Gallagher penalty, ridiculous, because that was a back-and-forth exchange. It should have been, at the very least, coinciding penalties for both sides. So I didn't love that one. I didn't think that one was the best call necessarily. And sure, you know, anything happens from that point forward, momentum switches on it. And so, you know, after the game, Dom Ducharme did say that he cleverly worded his way around complaining about the refereeing to avoid a fine. You know, he said momentum changed in that game, and the Canadiens didn't have anything to do with it, and Toronto Maple Leafs didn't have anything to do with it. While he's right that the momentum changed in that game, somewhat based on the penalty calls, I can't say the Canadiens didn't have anything to do with that, and I can't say the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't have anything to do with that. The Maple Leafs started to exact their own style of play. They started to take over the game. That led to the Canadiens trying to perhaps do a few more things to try and keep up with the Leafs, who were definitely the better team on Saturday. There was no question Game 2. The Leafs started to play their game before those penalties happened. Right before the game started to slip away from the Habs. And then, you know, obviously from that point on, it really fell apart for them. A 5-1 loss in Game 2. But things started good enough for the Habs in Game 2. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who had been slotted into the lineup with Evans out, scored 7:57 in. Nice one set up, you know, by a lot of hard work by Kotkaniemi. A lot of just waiting for that chance. He was right in front of the net in kind of the greasy zone. Kind of the same way he scored his first goal, I believe it was against, yeah, it was the first game, first goal he scored against the Pens last year in the bubble as well. So things looked good for the Canadiens in the early going. I expected the Leafs to immediately come out like gangbusters and really give them a hard time, but the first 10 minutes by the Habs were really solid. The rest of the way, things kind of slipped away. Jason Spezza goal, just about 5 minutes after the Kotkaniemi goal, evened things up. Very disappointing to see that one go. And that was one where you just felt like the Canadiens were letting the Leafs start to push their game a little bit. Suddenly the kind of get up and go that is supposed to be there for this team that is built for the playoffs, it was lagging behind. They were behind on every play, and things quickly started to fall apart. Auston Matthews did his thing 5 minutes into the second period, and from there on out, it all started slipping away. It's more scary, you know, the fact that the Leafs kind of scored two on the power play in this one was that all those penalties let the Leafs' power play wake up again. It needed confidence more than anything else, I imagine, because all the ingredients are there for a truly lethal power play. And they just needed the confidence, and the Canadiens let them score two power play goals in this one. Auston Matthews picking up an assist on both of them. Suddenly, the game had completely fallen away from the Habs. Of course, never came back. Some talk in that one as well around the challenge of the, what was it? The goal to make it 3-1? Yeah, I guess it was the goal to make it 3-1. That's exactly what it was. And so the challenge on that one, questionable, right? What should the Canadians have challenged it? They lost the challenge, so it's easy to say in hindsight, no, they shouldn't have. I've heard arguments both ways. Look, I thought the gamble was kind of okay. Those calls are so impossible to know. 50-50, you give yourself a 50-50 chance, I think, of getting that goal called back. Some people say no. There was not much evidence at all that Thornton had fucked with Price's stick. I thought it got in there. Or I thought there was potential to argue that it got in there. Obviously, you'd need something pretty conclusive since they did call it as a goal on the ice. But, so, I'm going to say it's 50-50 on where that gets called one way or another, if that goal stands or not. That's a 50-50 chance of getting it called back for what? Even if the Leafs' power play is at its most effectiveness, you've got a 20% chance that they score on that power play. Yes, you've lost two more minutes. I get all the arguments, and I would kind of make them the other way if I'd started this conversation, if I'd started this argument with, I don't think they should have made that challenge. I think there's arguments both ways. I think it was kind of worth the gamble at that point, because you're not coming, if that goal stands, you're not coming back. They hadn't found a way to score. I just don't think they were going to find a way to score more than one the rest of the way. I think it was a reasonable gamble considering what we'd seen from the team up to that point. So now struggling to score, having lost the game 5-1, of course, one of those goals in the empty net. The most impressive thing the Canadians did in that whole game was play the almost final 6 minutes at 6-on-5 with Carey Price pulled. And yes, eventually the Leafs were able to find the empty net, but not for a long time. The most impressive the Canadians were in that whole game was when they were actually putting some pressure on 6-on-5. Of course, you can't expect the Leafs to be too aggressive in that situation, up 4-1 as they were. You lay back and you just let the Canadians circle the puck around the outside, hoping for something to happen, or you pick it up and eventually score, as they did still. So now Cole Caulfield comes into the lineup. That's what we're looking at for Game 3. The lineup seems to be Tatar, Deneau, Anderson, so Gallagher off of that line. Armia, Suzuki, Caulfield. I like Suzuki and Caulfield together, of course. Toffoli, Kotkaniemi, Gallagher. I like that too. And then Lehkonen, Byron, and Perry. It's Eric Staal who has come out of the lineup, and that makes sense. He looked a lot more like the Eric Staal we saw in the regular season for Game 2 than he did the Eric Staal we saw for the, 12 minutes? Not even quite 12 minutes. Maybe not even quite 11 minutes in Game 1. So Staal out. I think that's the right call. Byron in the middle there with Lehkonen and Perry. And then it's Sherratt, Weber, Edmondson, Petrie, and Kulak, Merrill. Somehow, Romanov not coming into this, and it's not as if we saw great stuff from any of these defensemen. Obviously, things have been shuffled a little bit with Weber and Sherratt returning to their pairing. Edmondson and Petrie, they maintain, and Kulak and Merrill be playing together. Kulak and Romanov? Come on, we can't see that? John Merrill has been so good. John Merrill's been a negative. Romanov was one of our top four defensemen for almost the entirety of the season, except for in the end of the season when he was, for a brief moment, pushed to play Shea Weber-type minutes as a rookie in a very intense scenario where they're playing night in, night out, and things fell off a little bit. And suddenly, Romanov, who was the glowing child of the preseason, nobody could say enough good things about him. We have our top four defensemen, and Romanov is what everyone's telling us. Suddenly, he can't get in this series? I don't understand it. He's been out for like 11 days now. Let the kid play. Can he be worse than Merrill was? Is he going to make that crucial mistake? I think, yes, the series is even 1-1, and they're coming home, and that's mission accomplished. Really, it is. Like, to have come out of Toronto with a win, if you talked about before the series, absolutely mission accomplished. That's what you want to do. But the way the things went in Game 2, it feels like the Canadians are a little bit more behind the eight ball than just an even series coming home, just because they were very much outmatched the rest of the way in that game. And I think it's clear, even through game, even though they won Game 1, they only scored two, one of those on the penalty kill, and it took a beautiful effort by Paul Byron. I understand a rookie defenseman in the playoffs is risky-ish. That's how the thinking goes anyway, but I would like to see Romanov in there. He creates a lot of opportunities with his shot, and I frankly don't think he's been that irresponsible. He had a couple bad games at the end of the season. How many bad games did Weber have? How many bad games have we seen Sherratt play? Actually, not a ton, till more recently. He played a bad game in Game 2, I'll tell you that. Kulak, he's been meh at times. There's been flashes of okay from Kulak, but flashes of okay? John Merrill hasn't been good, and he's still in there. I don't know what's going on. Maybe there's something more to the Romanov thing, but I think it's just a lack of trust, and I don't know. I guess here's the other thinking there, and maybe I'll defend it. Caulfield comes in on Monday night for Game 3, and it is back-to-back. You're probably going to be playing these guys a lot of minutes, so maybe you bring Romanov in as that, no matter whether you're up 2-1 in the series or down 2-1, Romanov's something else that you can insert in this series when everyone's going to be tired in game 4. Because back-to-back, which is ridiculous that they're playing back-to-back games in the playoffs, I can't believe it. Here we are. The ultimate franchises in the NHL, pretty much, in Toronto, Montreal. And, let's just make them play back-to-back in the playoffs. We took a whole week off for no real reason as the Canadian division finished off, but now let's force them into back-to-back. It's dumb. I know both teams are at the same disadvantage in this situation and whatnot, but it seems quite unnecessary to do it. So, I see the advantage of, you know, it's almost like watching soccer when those fresh legs come in the late minutes of a significant player who hasn't played the rest of the game to get those extra legs in there. Maybe there's an argument to be made. We'll see how it all unfolds. Even, you know, the results will dictate whether or not the right decisions are made. And we can only speculate between now and then. But I would like to see Romanov for Game 3. He better be in there by Game 4, no matter what happens in Game 3, in my opinion. What else we got? Well, we're going to need to see the Canadiens' power play be better. They only had one opportunity in Game 2, and it looked as gross as anything we saw in Game 1, which is pretty sad because I think they spent most of their practice in that day off practicing the power play. But hey, Cole Caulfield comes to the power play now. That's a very significant add. We've seen it so far. He's always looking to shoot, always looking at finding the seams, as I consistently say. And I find that's my go-to about Caulfield. I'm sorry for that. But he finds the space. He finds the open spaces. He's very good at making room for himself. Toffoli might be in that bumper spot. Which would be nice to see a guy who has those quick hands and ability to really respond. Hopefully the power play, should they get some opportunities in Game 3, we'll see what Caulfield can do as he's added to the thing. Other than that, Carey Price, despite the 4 goals, was really solid again in Game 2. He's been pretty much what they've needed from Price thus far. The Habs put him in some tough spots, which is obvious. That's the evergreen for Carey Price in the playoffs, it seems, and Canadians not being able to score. You know, also evergreen in the playoffs for the Canadians. When's the last time they went to the playoffs and we weren't talking about difficulty scoring? Not that I can remember. Certainly not since I've been talking on microphones about this team. It's always the case. Cole Caulfield is a pure scorer. Hopefully he inserts something in the lineup. Game 3 is a big one, kind of as big as Game 1 now, where the Canadians, I think they need to once again put themselves in a spot where they get the Leafs doubting themselves, because all doubt that the Leafs may have had, it was firmly erased by that Game 2 effort. The fact that the Leafs scored on the power play, and they put up 5 when all is said and done, even if one was an empty netter, that still plays to your confidence. They're feeling very good heading to the Bell Center. The Canadians are the ones needing to make the adjustments. Let's see if Dom Ducharme and the gang have those tricks up their sleeves. Okay, till some point, I guess some point quickly, on between games 3 and 4. Maybe it'll be another pre-gamer like this one. Maybe we'll rope Sean in. Who knows? Till then, take care.